While it took over 2 years since bodies of seniors who died from COVID-19 were found stacked up in a makeshift morgue, the state of New Jersey has finally taken action to deal with the extremely poor care, endangerment of residents, quite frankly, at the Woodland Behavioral Nursing Home, which is in Andover, New Jersey. Joining us now to examine the elements of this story and whether it closes the book or just turns a page is the executive director of the Long-Term Care Community Coalition, Richard Mollett. Thanks for being here today, Richard.
Hi, Chris. Thanks so much for having me.
Nursinghome411.org, that is the website for Long-Term Care Community Coalition. Find out more about their work and how their work is helping and maybe can help a situation that you're dealing with. We've talked about this, you and I, as well as I've been going off on it for a couple of years now, but it took 2 years for something this blatant to be addressed by the state of New Jersey. That's got to prove that there's a broken system in place here.
I hate to put it that way. You know, I hate to think of it that way, but I think, unfortunately, that is absolutely right. And we have providers in this state that are able to persistently provide poor quality care, unsafe conditions for both residents, of course, as well as the care staff with impunity, because they're just not held accountable for meeting the standards that we all expect and all have a right to.
Just to catch you up listening, a Superior Court judge a week ago, this past Friday, took control of the Woodland Behavioral and Nursing Center in Andover and took it away from the owners. And this wasn't a judge hearing a case and saying, okay, I've heard from all parties, I'll advise you when I'll come up with my decision. No, boom, that day it happened. It wasn't any delay. This is too after federal officials said that they were going to cut all funding to the nursing home because of the concerns over safety for the residents. There's 366 residents at last count. I guess, Richard, the big question right now is, it's in receivership, which means if you ever watched some of those episodes of Law & Order, they have a forensic accountant come in, for example, and the person who owns the business under suspicion can't even order lunch without approval. That's basically what this facility is under now. They can't make a move on their own. And they're looking for a new owner. Good luck with that. But is that a better situation, or is a transfer of the patients a better situation? Let's just forget about that this place ever existed.
Well, you know, that's a good question, too. You know, there's two facilities there, they were called Andover 1 and Andover 2. Now, Woodlands, if I'm remembering correctly, and I forget the other facility's name. It is a center. My point being is it is a center where people are going for care. It is a rural area. And I think that, you know, it's important to have nursing home access to care wherever people are, preferably as close to their communities as possible so families, et cetera, can visit. At the same time, I think we're moving away from these gargantuan facilities, especially in rural areas. You know, if you're in a city, if you're in say, Newark or Cherry Hill or New York City, you know, you can't, you know, you're, by default, you're going to have a higher density of population and therefore higher, you know, resident census for buildings. But if you're in a rural area, you should really be providing single rooms, certainly, and much more space for residents and not have these monolithic facilities that too often just become an ATM machine for providers.
I haven't heard anything definite on this, but the suspicion, for lack of a better word, is that this facility or these facilities, the one right across the street from the other in this off the highway chunk of land that they have, they were taking a large number of people with serious mental health problems, dementia, schizophrenia, bipolar disorders, other severe mental illnesses, which, by the way, the lawyers for Woodland Hills, they basically use that as a defense. Well, it's tough taking care of these people, they said. Well, when did you try taking care of them? That would be my question.
Well, that's honestly just a horrific and unconscionable response. The fundamental requirement, as far as I'm concerned, I've been doing this for 20 years now, I mean, to me, the fundamental concern of federal and state nursing home protections is that a facility follow the rules, and rule number one is that you do not accept a resident unless you have the ability to care for him or her and enable that person to achieve their highest practicable physical, emotional, and psychosocial well-being. And that's pretty much quoting from the federal rules. And that comes up over and over again in the federal rules. Highest practicable. And that's what the facility is required to provide. It's not a gerbil farm. It's not a storage unit or warehouse. This is caring for very vulnerable people, and nursing homes are required. I think one important thing, if I may, that the audience should know is that every nursing home is required to only accept residents who they have the services, the staff, et cetera, to meet these needs, and that has to be based upon the resident assessment and a detailed care plan, which residents and families are entitled to participate in. So these are really important protections, but again, as you noted before, too often they're scoffed off because we don't have strong enforcement in the state, and facilities know they can get away with it.
Or they're fined, maybe, and I know it sounds like a large amount of money, a token fine. In this case, it was around $220,000. When you look at a business, that's a multi-million dollar per year business. So the punishment isn't truly a consequence in this case. We're talking to Richard Mollis, who is the executive director of the Long-Term Care Community Coalition. Nursing Home 411.org is their website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. I was getting to a point, but I know I drifted off. They're being charged with, being accused rather, of running on the third floor, I think, of one of the facilities. The term I heard was an unlicensed psychiatric hospital. And when I look at their financials, they're about $4 million in the red, which makes me believe, did they create the situation as a way to try to keep the boat afloat?
That's really interesting. One of the things that we do see, and according to a Kaiser Health News New York Times study a couple of years ago, that 75% of nursing homes use what are called related party transactions, and that's a way that the industry can hide profits by contracting with companies that they themselves own for, rental of land, for therapy services, for food and laundry services, et cetera. So we see, unfortunately, a lot of money funneled out. And that's why, by the way, we really applauded what New Jersey did to increase accountability and transparency, and frankly, what the Biden administration is calling for now, because it's really necessary, because you see a lot of these facilities that are obviously for profit. These people aren't running charities. They tend not to be very charitable individuals to begin with. And, to say that they're operating at a low margin or at a loss is just a lot of, generally speaking, I can't speak to anything specific without looking at it, but generally speaking, it's just a lot of accounting shenanigans, frankly.
And also, you mentioned about the rules and regulations mandates that these facilities are under and the actions New Jersey has taken. Question is, are they enforcing them? If you look at the staffing regulations and what's mandated, the minimum nurses' aid to resident ratio, the last two reports, fourth quarter of 2021, first quarter of 2022, fourth quarter 21, only 58.1, there were 58.1% of the facilities with insufficient CNA staff. That very next quarter, that number went up to 59%. And on top of that, there was 12% of the facilities did not even supply data to the New Jersey Department of Health. So where are the consequences?
That's a good question. I mean, this is really the heart of what we do as an organization, is to try to get states like New Jersey, try to get the federal government, which is responsible for overseeing New Jersey, to ensure that they are enforcing the rules. Now, this is a state rule, so it wouldn't be from the federal side. It would be wholly from the state side. We have to have enforcement. These rules are not self-implementing. Just because, we're thankful, I should say, for the legislature and for the governor to sign them into law, but just signing them into law doesn't make it happen. You have to have enforcement. And, a fine here and there, it's very unusual to have a multi-$100,000 fine the way that this company did. But generally speaking, it had years and years of very little fines, one big fine. But it's a gamble that providers can take because they almost always win. It's very rare that we get, and it has to be generally pretty horrific, as you noted at the beginning of this report, for the state or the federal government or for a court of law to step in and say, okay, we're done here. You have reached the end of your rope. How many residents suffered? How many residents died unnecessarily? How many were demeaned and living in terrible conditions for years for this to finally happen?
And this is why the State Commission of Investigation, the State Attorney General's Office, and the U.S. Department of Justice have investigations into the Andover facilities in progress. Now, it'd be nice if the state legislature did their part, because those three investigations, that takes care of the legalities. The state Senate investigation would deal more with the policies, the laws, and the failure to enforce said policies and laws. But the attempt to launch that committee, bipartisan effort, by the way, Democrat State Senator Nia Gill and Republican State Senator Joe Panaccio, that was voted down by 17 Democrats, and that was put on the back burner again, despite the promises that there would be a committee investigation. So that is, again, like I said in the introduction, maybe this is just the turning of the page. The book is not yet going to be closed, but we will keep an eye on this, as will the organization that Richard represents, Long-Term Care Community Coalition, nursinghome411.org. He is our executive director, Richard Mahler. Thanks so much for being here today.
Chris, thank you very much. Have a great day. Appreciate it.